another episode of the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
Franklin Curry.
And thank you, as always, for hanging out with us on WGR550.com and On Demand Audio. Frank, On Demand Audio is about to get a logjam.
Is it?
Bills training camp starts Thursday. We have made it. We are here. And this is not the penultimate training camp preview, though, Frank. That is for our next podcast.
Wednesday.
Which will be released one day before Bills training camp and the day that the team reports to St. John Fisher College in Rochester. So, Frank, the Bills get started. And I can't wait for this thing to really get going here because, look, you can have all the feel-good stuff and, you know, things like the Open and World Cup and stuff like that. But now, football gets going once again.
Yep.
And the Ravens and Bears have already gotten to work. They play at the Hall of Fame game, and nobody will watch that.
Very true.
People are there to pretty much take in the players going into the Hall of Fame themselves. Not so much the game.
No one
really.
The
game kind of gets overlooked.
Cares about the game.
Yes. I mean, the best thing I've ever seen from a Hall of Fame game was Fred Jackson throwing a touchdown pass.
Yeah.
That's just about it.
Yeah. The most interesting part about the Hall of Fame game and the Hall of Fame ceremony in general is the one guy who's not going to be there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Terrell Owens. His war continues against the Hall of Fame. I'd still rather it be about the entire class and not the guy that is not going to be there.
Right.
Because he would be part of the entire class if he just showed up. However, sometimes you have to fight salt with salt. And that is exactly what Terrell Owens is doing, and I don't blame him for that part at all. That is where I suspect things will, you know, keep making things just about Terrell Owens. And yes, that's a T.O. thing to do, to make it about himself.
Of course.
Terrell Owens, though, he might not be able to do his Hall of Fame thing out at Tennessee Chattanooga, for example. Because he's looking into playing in the CFL. 44 or 45? How old is Terrell Owens? He's 44 or 45.
Yeah, he's somewhere around there.
And that man is going to attempt to play professional football at the CFL.
Good for him. 44.
44 years old. And he thinks he still got it. It's a little deceptive because he ran a nice 40 time a couple of weeks back or so. And straight line speed is the last thing to go.
Right.
That's what I keep hearing. It's the other stuff. The cutting, route running, physicality, for example. You have to see what happens there. I'm intrigued. I mean, maybe he does go ahead and play in the CFL. That would be another big draw or another big name that has happened from this season. The other has actually just gotten traded. I can't believe I'm the one that brought it up. That Johnny Manziel,
you are the one that brought it up.
That Johnny Manziel has been traded to Montreal from Hamilton. Which would have been a nice, convenient drive for us if we ever wanted to watch Johnny Football playing some football.
Yeah.
Of Canadian types of football, but still football. But no, now he has been dealt to Montreal, which means
he'll be starting for them.
He'll be starting for them, probably. You don't acquire a guy like that unless you want to put him under center. And we'll see what happens there. People are going to have their eyes open.
That means people are going to Montreal or what games?
Me? I don't really care.
No,
about
no,
Johnny
no we don't really. No, the NFL world doesn't really care.
There are NFL fans that care.
It's the fans. Yeah.
Fans care.
Especially the ones on Twitter.
I don't know why.
Because the name. That's why.
But
it's
they
just
care.
The name.
Johnny NFL Manziel. Executives will be a little intrigued to see if they can have a new backup quarterback in this league. Because you can never have enough decent backup quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Because injuries happen.
If he has a really good year, you know, you're looking at
a team might kick the tires on it.
Yeah, he'll take a shot.
So we'll see what happens there.
I mean, he will be starting for Montreal.
Yes.
He will. they have three other quarterbacks on the roster, and they're all pretty bad. Like, last year, all three of them started games. I think two of them started, like, four games.
Yep.
Something like, I don't know how many games they play in the CFL, but for their seasons. But
who are the names of these players on the Montreal roster? Bring them up to me.
Let me grab it real quick.
Because I want to see if there's any fun little college quarterback trivia that I could guess where these players are from. Because sometimes you end up a huge college football fan and you remember the schools of random players that were drafted.
You want just the ones on the main roster?
Yeah, give me the guys that are playing there.
Okay.
That are suiting up.
Three quarterbacks.
Three.
The first one, Vernon Adams Jr.
Oregon. The Oregon quarterback. He might not start right away.
All right, the other one is Matthew Schiltz.
Nope.
And the other last one is Drew Willey.
Oh, don't you dare start him now. Oh, no. No. He's not starting over our boy Drew Willey from Buffalo. No. No. Don't do it. Come on now. Don't do this to Drew Willey. They're going to do it.
So Vernon Adams last year actually played for Saskatchewan.
The Rough Riders?
Yep. Only played three games.
Okay.
Was 1 of 3 on passes for 8 yards.
So he suited up for three games and attempted three passes.
Yeah.
Oof.
And he's also ran the ball himself.
Okay.
For 33 yards that year. And three touchdowns.
Three rushing touchdowns?
Yep.
Okay, so what is he, a gimmick?
Yeah.
All right, interesting.
Pretty much. So far for Montreal this year, he has not thrown a pass and has rushed for 1 yard.
All right, so he's in for a quarterback sneak or something like that.
Yeah. He was with Montreal in 2016. He played four games and was 42-75 for 575 yards, four touchdowns, one interception.
Not bad. It's not a bad resume, actually. I don't know why they didn't stick to him. Is it because of Drew Willey?
Well, let's go Schiltz real quick.
Okay.
Who, so far this year, one game, 16-25, 160 yards, one touchdown, two picks.
Okay, so not great.
And 18 yards of rushing. Drew Willey is in his second year with Montreal. So far through in four games, he is 52-79.
Not bad.
566 yards, three touchdowns, one pick.
So why did they trade for Mansell again?
I don't know.
Sounds like Drew Willey should be the boy there.
Drew Willey's been in the CFL too since 2012.
Yeah, protect the UB product. He's a starter. Get out of here, Mansell. I'm talking in extent.
He threw for 3,700 yards 4 years ago.
I'm talking in extent about the Canadian Football League.
Yeah.
And having problems with
this is peak offseason right now.
This is peak offseason, which lasts for a grand total of 4 more days.
Yeah. So, Montreal has Johnny Manziel.
Montreal has Johnny Manziel. How about that?
Him and Drew Willey will be competing for the starting job.
Oh, boy. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
And by interesting, I mean back away from our UB boy. Johnny. Now mad. Now
they have
miffed.
Another former UB Bull on the team, too.
And that is?
Ernest Jackson, wide receiver.
All right. UB representing in Montreal.
Yeah.
Keep going. All right. So, that, like you said, that's peak offseason right there.
Yeah.
We just talked.
He said a couple. I'm looking at this right now, too.
For about, I would say, 3 or 4 minutes or so on Canadian football.
I'm looking at stats right now, too.
Frank's diving into stats of the Canadian Football League.
Four UB Bulls playing
four
in the
more
Canadian football.
Days, okay?
He had a 2,000-yard seasons in the CFL.
Really?
Yeah, both with Ottawa, 2015-2016.
Come on, nothing good is in Ottawa.
Well, apparently he was.
He was, okay, that's fair.
2015, he had 84 catches for 1,036 yards and 5 touchdowns. And then the year after that, 88 catches for 1,225 and 10 touchdowns.
This guy seems like he is pretty good over there, eh?
Yeah.
All right. And then Drew Willey is the quarterback over there. So next thing you know, we can talk about some more football in a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good.
And then we get hockey in the intermission of the halftime. We get to play hockey. And then...
No, a hockey game is what goes on during halftime of CFL.
Exactly.
Game. Not the players don't yet. Yeah, and the players don't play in it. No, no. They get other people to play.
They have another... There's a different game.
It's a beer league. It's a beer league game.
A beer league game for halftime.
Yeah.
Jesus.
They play the first period as pregame. The second period is halftime. And the third period is after the game. That's how they get people to stay after the game.
It's a rather lengthy intermission, wouldn't you think? That an entire football game has to happen in between two of your periods? Before you can finally close things out?
Yeah.
Next thing you know, one of those CFL players is stepping on the ice like, wait, what the hell?
What are we doing here? This isn't our sport.
No, I'm actually on this beer league team. Nobody knew.
Oh,
and I'm here to finish up the game here.
So did you watch the Open today?
I did not. Why not? Was out and about with family today. I enjoyed interacting with humans for once.
I was interacting with humans today, watching golf.
Okay. Well, that's great. But I was outside and doing other stuff. Like, you know.
Tiger had the lead today. He had the lead.
That's kind of unfortunate that he lost it like that.
Couple mistakes. It was the 11th hole. He was in a very tough spot for his third shot on the par four, where actually the second shot had gone into the gallery, hit a fan, and it bounced, and it was...
Hit a fan.
It literally hit a fan.
Yo, what would it be like to have that happen? Just be like, you're watching, next thing you know.
Oh, it hits you? You're like, yeah, you're like, ow, that really hurt? And then you're like...
Yo, I got hit by...
And then the golfer who... And then Tiger comes up to you and says, hey, I'm sorry I hit you, here's a glove. And then signs it. And then
I think the reaction would have came immediately after, be like, yo, who hit that ball? Tiger? I got hit by a Tiger Woods shot? Hell yeah.
Yeah. And then he's like, and then he gets a signed glove.
That's a bonus.
It's a bonus. Oh, no, golfers do that all the time.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, that's literally the
bonus
term.
Is that it's Tiger.
Like, in the dictionary, that is a definition of an added perk because you get to say, yo, I got whacked with a shot by Tiger Woods at the Open.
Sunday Tiger Woods, who is leading. At the time.
Wearing the iconic uniform.
The red. Yep.
The red and black.
Yep.
And he got struck by a ball.
Yep.
So that fan gets to live that on forever. He probably got high fives around the crowd. Yo, dude, like, I'm amped immediately. Just
I don't even care.
Just come. Ow!
Yeah. And they know it's Tiger, too. Like, yeah, it's not like the fan wasn't paying attention. He was watching.
He clearly wasn't paying attention enough. He got hit by a golf ball.
No. Sometimes you just can't get out of the way.
Where did it hit him?
I don't know.
That's the next question I have.
It didn't show it.
Oh, come on. That's probably because nobody expected that to
happen.
Probably
like in the leg or something.
My leg.
Yeah. So then what happened was he had a tough third shot. Ball was below his feet.
Talk more about this fan that got hit.
Listen.
Like before you keep going,
that was it then. Like I know it's
if you were
fantastic.
To take look, this is the Leftovers podcast, and we typically divert, and I'm doing that right now. I'm actually so strong on diverting right now that I'm doing this.
Yeah,
but like, if you were to have to get hit by a golf ball, where would you want to do? Like, you don't want it clonking off your head,
obviously.
You don't want it hitting you in the groinal area.
Yeah.
So
if you're gonna like, get hit,
you know what? I've got a lot of meat there with the chest. You know what? I'd rather get hit in the chest.
I'd rather get hit in the leg.
I think I'd rather get hit in the chest.
The thing, though, is that ball bounced first, so it's not going to hurt.
It didn't straight up strike him?
No.
Okay, so maybe he was paying enough attention.
Yeah.
Like, when you said that, I thought, like, some guy was just, like, dilly-dallying along, and next thing you know, you just...
No.
Do you hear it? Ow! That's my dream scenario right there.
I mean, that
someone
has
get donked by a golf ball.
I mean, that has happened.
Oh, of course, it's probably happened.
Yeah,
people have gotten whacked by hockey pucks in the face.
Yeah,
a dad saved his kid on his phone at a baseball game, straight up snatching a ball.
Yeah.
Like, these things happen. Of course they do.
Yeah.
I was just wishing that it would have happened by Tiger so that that guy could be like, yo, I just got pelted by a shot by Tiger Woods. I like that would officially make you the coolest person ever. But it bounced to him. That's kind of lame. Because there's not a lot of dodging you can do there. And why does Tiger got to apologize now?
Like what? Because like, he still put the ball where the fans were.
I know, but like the guy didn't need a signed glove. He didn't deck him with the ball. It didn't hit him full speed.
It's just how it is in golf.
I mean, I guess it's about being a nice guy too, being like, "Yo, sorry, I inconvenienced you, and now you."
If you're a pro golfer, and you've got all these fans who were there's a decent amount of cash to make, and a lot of money online in the tournament too. And
you're Tiger Woods.
And you put the ball where the fans are standing, where they're told to stand. You know, it doesn't matter how bad you hit them, or if it bounced a few times and like, bounced a few times and like touched them, that's different. But if it bounces once, or even just dives bomb right into the fan,
I guess, I'm being selfish
that I wanted him to.
Yeah, but like, I'm being selfish about what I saw in my head when you told me and what actually happened.
That's fair because it's a better story.
It's a better story
to tell your friends.
Oh, you know he's telling that story.
Oh yeah, he's gonna tell us. Yeah, I mean,
especially if there's no video evidence.
It was live. So of course, you know.
But like, there's no video of it actually happening, right? Like it just like where it struck him, how it struck him.
No, they didn't go that in depth. Though.
Yeah, like, so that guy's gonna
be able
to.
They showed the initial Tiger, I took a
Tiger Woods drive like, off the leg.
They showed Tiger shot live, and then when it went into the fans, and when it bounced out, and where it ended up being for his third shot, and then they showed a replay of it just once, basically the same angle.
Yeah,
and like that was it.
So like that guy's gonna be able to be like, yo, I totally got in the way to help someone not get hit by that shot.
You know what? Yeah, I don't remember exactly how it went, but that may very well be.
That's what he's saying. I don't exactly remember how it went, but I totally got in front of this one guy, and I got hit by that ball. And then he gave me a signed glove because I dove in the way to block it from someone else getting hit.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it's going to go down from now on.
Yeah. So basically, to go back, what happened was his third shot, he had the bunker kind of in front of him, and the hole is a really tough location. So he tried to flop it up, kind of, and was short of the green, and ended up double bogeying the hole, and
ouch,
dropped him back to 5 under, and that's pretty much where
he wound up.
That's where he stayed the rest of the round and finished even par for the round and 5 under overall.
I've got a question for you.
Hmm.
Did Rory McIlroy shoot 2 under for each of the 4 rounds?
No.
Okay. Because he did it for the first.
He would have won if that happened.
Ah, right. Because 8 under, right, makes enough sense.
Actually, he would have been tied. Actually, because 8 under won the tournament. I know.
Because that would have been a really nice round of golf.
To be fair, Francesco Molinari, who won the tournament, first Italian to ever win the Open.
Nice.
Won with the final round of 69.
Nice. It's a nice round, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what he has to average. He'd be 8 under.
Yeah.
Is a nice round of golf.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout 4 rounds. Yes, I'm a juvenile child and I'm never going to change.
Okay? We are all children.
This is the Leftovers podcast. No, but again, Tiger being in the conversation and then having the lead at one point is probably the best thing that could have happened this weekend for golf.
Yep.
Because again, if Tiger's in the conversation, people are watching.
And you know what this means too? People are going to watch the PGA Championship in August.
The big third round from Tiger was the key. And that gets everyone going.
Yeah, when he shot that, yeah.
When he moved the most on moving day, it's just like, "Oh boy, here we go."
He's doing it.
Like, you know,
oh my God.
That one scene in The Office, Michael Scott just, oh my God, it's happening.
Guys.
Yeah, that was literally everyone on golf Twitter.
And as I just said too, that's going to make people watch the PGA Championship.
And that's
the last
huge.
Major of the year.
That is huge for them.
Mm-hmm.
Huge for them because Tiger is back. That's what the narrative is now. He is back. This isn't...
He is... I say he is partially back.
But this isn't mere flirtation and then dropping off in the last 2 days. This is... The dude had the lead in day four.
He was right at the cusp of Vince.
That's
Tiger.
What I'm saying. This is different.
Yeah.
This is different because you can say, oh, he didn't just flirt with it for three rounds and then taper off and it's done. No, the man had the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And that
he
is where
played
the PGA,
comeback because
yes.
he shot, he was even.
Even through two rounds.
Through both rounds. And then the third day happens.
And the third
and
day.
He makes the jump.
Moving day, it's called that for a reason. And Tiger.
He moved.
Moved the most, and that is where things got busy. And that's where things got exciting, and the PGA Championship, like you said, is going to have so many more eyes on it.
That's
going to
be more fun.
I mean, look, I'm not a
lot
golf.
Of eyes
I'm
on
not
Tiger.
I'm not a golf guy.
Yeah.
You know this.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, if you ever took me out on the greens, I would embarrass myself.
Oh, we're doing that.
By terrible golfer standards.
We're going to do that. We're going to do that.
Expect a video of that on my Twitter handle at Derek Kramer WGR because Frank will tag it at Frank R. Curie,
yes.
and he will be proud to broadcast my golf follies to the world.
We'll go to the driving range.
The driving range is so lame to me.
You want to do that? You want to go on the course?
I feel like if I'm going to fail miserably, it might as well be the real thing.
All right, we'll do that.
And now I just willingly signed up for it. Oh, boy. What did I do? Can I drive the golf cart?
Yes.
That was a bad idea. You giving me permission to do that was a terrible idea.
Are you sure?
Yes.
You just can't do anything stupid.
Welcome to the Leftovers Podcast.
They will kick us out.
Hi, welcome to the Leftovers Podcast. I'm Derek Kramer. Do you want to try that again with the don't do anything stupid? Bulldog's show on Friday was about unleashing all of the cold takes.
Yeah, I know. It was hilarious.
I brought up that I liked Tim Tebow at one point. And I can't stand Tebow anymore as a quarterback prospect. Like, people say, Tebow was great. No, he wasn't. The worst part was, I was one of those idiots. That literally was me. I'm a stupid child. But I'm not a child. I was, oh my God.
So I got something that is hilarious and awesome at the same time.
I feel like I need to take a shower after bringing that back up again.
So check this out.
I liked Tim Tebow.
So golfer Eddie Pepperell.
Okay.
He's from England. He finished tied for six. He was tied with Tiger.
Okay.
Tied for six. Shot 4 under today in the final round. The best part about him for today was his quote after the rounds. Because through the first three rounds, he was 1 under par.
Oh, wow. So he made
71, 70,
71. He made a big move.
Yeah. But it was his quote afterwards. He said, I wasn't in contention. I knew I wasn't. I didn't think I was going to be in contention heading into today. He was 1 under through the first three rounds, of course. 8 shots back.
Yep.
Before shooting the 67. So I went out drinking last night, and I was pretty hungover when my round started today. So he was hung over and shot a 67.
That man officially became the most relatable person in the world.
Yep.
Like I said, that was Phil Mickelson when he hit that ball while it was still moving because he didn't want to have to whack the ball another 10 times to try to get it back into the hole.
Yep.
No, that is the most relatable golf thing ever now. The dude was hung over, whacking a ball, and the next thing you know, he's in contention for a chance to win it.
Here's the quote. I was a little hungover, I won't lie. I had too much to drink last night, and I was so frustrated yesterday that today was really, I wouldn't say a write-off, but I didn't feel I was in the golf tournament. Whether I shot 69 or 73 today, it wouldn't have been heartbreaking. But as it happens, I shot 67, so, you know, it's a funny game.
Again, that's the most relatable thing ever, because I cannot tell you how many people that I know, yourself included, that golf can be such a strange thing.
Yep.
And I don't know how you people torment yourself with it. I really don't. Hey, Frank, guess what? For the first time in forever, we've got a guest on the line here on the Leftovers Podcast.
It's been a while.
It's been a while, and it's also been a while since I've talked with Mark Schofield. Mark, I think, the last time we talked was the NFL draft, and you were trying to talk me off a ledge, and it didn't work?
I think that's exactly right, Derek. That was the last time we chatted. It was early morning, Friday morning.
Yes, it was 1 a.m. on a Friday. We're doing Sports Thunder.
1 a.m.
Yes.
And
I did what I could.
You did. You did, but the problem was it didn't make me feel better about the drafting of Josh Allen.
Derek, I'm not a miracle worker. Nobody's ever accused me of being a miracle worker. I did what I could, but it's going to be up to young Josh Allen himself to try to talk everybody in Buffalo off of that proverbial ledge.
And I mean,
or maybe
be fair,
a literal ledge.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. To be fair, we did also put you in a tough spot asking you to talk us off the ledge at 1 a.m. on a Friday morning. So I can't really dog you too much for that.
No, I mean, look, I knew the assignment going in because when you guys reached out and asked me to come on at that time, it was, you know, draft week, and we all kind of assumed, although maybe people didn't want to admit it at the time, that Josh Allen was somehow going to be a Buffalo Bill by that time come Friday morning. And so I knew the assignment going in. I knew that I was going to have to jump on that proverbial grenade, so to speak, and I accepted it. I accepted my role and did the best that I could and earned myself a Purple Heart in the process, I believe.
Yes, yes, you did.
Or the podcast version of a Purple Heart, not to, you know, go down too metaphorical of a road here.
I've got a sticker.
Fantastic. That was a gold star.
There we go. It's a purple sticker. That's all I got. It's a purple circle, and I can cut it into a heart, and then we've got it. We nailed it.
There
we got
go.
It there. That's the podcast version of a Purple Heart. So, Mark, training camp is about to get started here. And, I mean, hey, look, I know you come from the land of spoiled QB treatment with the Patriots and everything like that. But at this point, it's just got to be asked. I mean, how bad do you think New England winds up running away with this division?
I mean, this is one of those situations where, you know, for how many seasons we've been thinking or we've been wondering when it gets to be, you know, late July, early August, is this a year a team finally steps up and challenges the Patriots? It looks like this would be the year where people are really shying away from making any such predictions because you're looking at a situation where you might have two rookie quarterbacks in this division by Halloween, and then who knows what you're going to get from Ryan Tannehill, whether he's back to form or they're going to be able to challenge, you know, coming out of Miami. And so this might be the one year where you don't have that slew of stories where people are saying, oh, this is a year where the Patriots finally get knocked off that AFC East throne. That being said, you know, let's not pretend that, you know, this has been the summer of cool, calm waters up in New England. You come off a Super Bowl loss. Gronkowski's griping about his contract and rumbling about perhaps retiring. You have more sort of the Brady, Kraft, Belichick triumvirate of angst stories coming out with Adam Kirkson reporting that there was a deal perhaps in place to move Rob Gronkowski, that Brady stepped in and said, look, you do this, I'm done, I'm retiring. And while that was denied, it was called hogwash by Robert Kraft. The fact is that other outlets did report or did confirm at least part of Adam's report. And so there is a bit of unease as we head into training camp out of New England. Now, that being said, this still looks like the team to beat in the AFC East. I don't think they're going to face a ton of competition, a ton of trouble trying to at least get to an AFC East title. But beyond that, I think is going to be a little bit interesting to watch for the Patriots this year.
And that's where I'm going to lead that, Mark, is quite frankly, do you think that if New England is going to try to make it back to the Super Bowl here, who would be the main obstacles, I think, to New England making it for the third straight year?
I mean, if you look around the AFC East, right? I mean, the AFC in general, excuse me. Obviously, you look at teams like Jacksonville, who made it to an AFC Championship game last year. That young, talented defense, Leonard Fournette in that running game, they're going to be dangerous. And we'll get a, you know, sense, a nice measure and stick in week two when New England heads down to Jacksonville for an AFC Championship game rematch, which is going to be probably the game of the week, you know, in the NFL in week two. Obviously, Pittsburgh, Le'Veon Bell says that, you know, this is my last year as a Steeler. I'm going to make it my best. As long as they have him, Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, they should be good. And then you kind of look around at some other teams that might be to get themselves into some playoff contention. You know, maybe the Tennessee Titans, maybe they take a step, you know, under Mike Vrabel, under offensive coordinator, their new offensive coordinator, Matt LaFleur. Maybe he does some stuff in terms of stealing designs and concepts from Sean McVay, who he was coaching under last year to sort of help Marcus Mariota. The Titans, I think, are a team to watch, you know, in the AFC is kind of a dark horse. But, you know, I think it's Pittsburgh. I think it's Jacksonville. I think those are the two teams to really sort of watch, you know, as we get into this season.
All right, so Mark, you're my guy to turn to with quarterbacks. That's really all. Like that's one of my big things is that if I have any issues with quarterbacks and I have like any sort of questions that I have to ask, the first man I'm always going to turn to is you, my man. And
well, I appreciate that.
Hey, man, when you're good, you're good. So I've got to ask because it's one of the biggest burning questions in Buffalo right now. The three-headed quarterback monster that is A.J. McCarron, Nathan Peterman, and Josh Allen. And one of my biggest concerns right now with Josh Allen, and I've slowed down, I've come away from the ledge myself, if only so that I can embrace Josh Allen as the Bills quarterback. I don't want to let my brain get in the way of it anymore. I just want to be able to embrace it and say, hey, let's just let this guy be good. But my biggest fear is if they rush him into this lineup, I think that that could be a huge detriment to the development of Josh Allen. When would you suspect it would be the best time to put him in this season, if at all?
I'm very much of the mind that when you look at, you know, my evaluation, others in their evaluations of Josh Allen, of all the quarterbacks and all the settings for them to possibly play as rookies, you know, this might be one of the worst environments for a rookie quarterback facing, you know, for a rookie quarterback this upcoming season. You look at this roster, you look at some of the question marks up front, you look at some of the question marks perhaps at the skill positions for the Buffalo Bills. This probably isn't the right environment for a quarterback who does need a lot of work. And I think there are a lot of people that, you know, regardless of where they've sort of ranked Josh Allen, whether they had him as their top QB or their QB5 in this class even, you know, they all could sort of agree at least on the fact that this was a guy that needed some work. There were things that he had to improve upon from a touch standpoint, from an anticipation standpoint, from a standpoint of learning that you can't just bail the pocket to your right and try to play hero ball when you get into trouble. You have to do things differently in the NFL. And so he's going to need some time this season. The problem is, you can only learn so much by watching. At some point, he's going to have to get on the field. Now, if it were me, I wouldn't want to see him on the field until, you know, November or so. And I think it's a situation where you truly have to handle it the absolute right way. You're going to have to accept the fact that he's going to make mistakes. You might have to pull him. You know, you don't want him going out there after he's thrown his third interception of a game, going running him back out there, anticipating he's going to make another one. You don't want to destroy his confidence. If he starts taking a beating back there, get him out of there. I mean, look what happened to David Carr. I mean, playing behind an offensive line that couldn't protect him. He was getting knocked around, and it just broke him. And I think that's a situation you have to avoid with Josh Allen. You have to bring him along slowly. You have to help his developmental curve as best as you can. And you have to protect him from sort of a mental standpoint where if he starts getting battered back there, starts making mistakes back there, starts making some bad reads back there, you've got to be able to sit him down, get him on the bench, and calm him down. And that's why you've got the two veteran guys. Well, Peterman being a second-year guy, I'm still, you know, he's not a rookie. That's why you've got McCann. That's why you've got Peterman. Put them in there if you have to sort of, you know, stave off ruining the quarterback. If you've made this investment in Josh Allen, you have to handle it the absolute right way.
Mark Schofield joining us here on the Leftovers podcast and on the AT&T hotline here. Derek Kramer, Frank Arcuri, we all hanging out. And thanks as always for listening. Mark, another big question then becomes, between Peterman and McCarron, who has the edge here? Because everything that I continue to see about Nathan Peterman is that this coaching staff does still love him, and they still think that he could be something, you know, going forward, probably like a long-term backup role for this organization. So I have to ask you here, it's who would you go ahead and put in here before any of these players step on the field on Thursday? Who would be your favorite heading into training camp?
I mean, I think my favorite, and I give him sort of a schematic type edge, would be A.J. McCarron, because you look at sort of some of the stuff that he's tailored to run from a schematic fit standpoint. It sort of fits well with what we anticipate Brian Daboll's offense to look like. Obviously, there are some Alabama connections there, number one, sort of that Ernst Perkins system, you know, that Brian Daboll has a background in with his time with the New England Patriots. You know, there were rumors, obviously, that the Patriots showed some interest in A.J. McCarron, the schematic fit being a reason why, because the thought is that a guy like A.J. McCarron, given his background in that type of offense, could come in and run it, you know, decently for New England, you know, if something happened to Tom Brady. That's why they at least kicked the tires on that type of move. So I think because of that schematic fit, you know, A.J. McCarron might have a slight sliver of an edge coming into training camp. But like you said, you know, the Bills organization, the Bills coaching staff seems to think highly of Nathan Peterman. Obviously, we all remember how the change to Nathan Peterman went last year, but there's a reason they drafted him. There's a reason why, you know, there's, you know, there's interest in him. There's still excitement about him, even though they drafted Josh Allen. That this is a league where you need two quarterbacks. And I think the anticipation is that Josh Allen is going to be QB1, probably to start next year, maybe at some point this year. But you can't just rely on having one quarterback. We've seen it the past couple of seasons where teams that make it to a Super Bowl, teams that win a Super Bowl, you need at least a solid backup quarterback, because at some point you might have to run that guy out there. If you don't have a plan B, you're sunk as a team. And so even if it ends up being Josh Allen, like many people expect, I think there's still excitement that they have Peterman. They still believe in him. And McCarron, because of the schematic ties, is probably at least a viable plan C. So I think McCarron probably has the edge going in for the short term. But obviously, long term, I think Allen is the answer, with Peterman perhaps their backup of the future.
All right. Staying in the division. And Sam Darnold is there in a crowded quarterback room for the New York Jets. You've got Darnold, you've got Bridgewater, you've got McCown. McCown being that veteran presence there. Do you think the Jets might be more prone, seeing as how Bridgewater is there as well, to possibly trying to stash Darnold for the season as well?
I think they're going to try to stash him as long as they can. What's interesting about Darnold, and similar to Josh Allen, is that there are certainly things that he has to fix from a mechanical standpoint, both upper and lower body, things that he has to refine in his throwing motion, things that he has to improve upon, such as his decision making, and, you know, similar to Allen, not, you know, trying to play hero ball all the time. You know, the thing that's interesting with the Jets is, you know, Josh McCown, for him, is coming off a career season. And obviously that's not saying a ton, but it was still his best season as a passer in the NFL. And you've got Teddy Bridgewater, who led a team to the playoffs. And now you've got your rookie quarterback you drafted in the top five. And so that's a crowded quarterback room. I think if you're a Jets fan, if you're listening to this and you're a fan of Dan Green, you know, your ideal situation is that, you know, Darnold looks decent enough that you don't have to worry about him seeing action this year if something happens. McCown is Josh McCown, but he's at least a stable enough starter. And Bridgewater goes out there and proves maybe in, you know, the fourth preseason game or the second preseason game that he's healthy enough to truly play and, you know, stick in the NFL after his career threatened injury, that the Jets could possibly move Bridgewater because they're comfortable enough in Darnold at some point being the backup if McCown goes down, and they are able to get something for Bridgewater, who they signed on such a low-term, low-cost, low-risk deal. I think that's sort of a dream situation, so to speak, if you're the Jets or a Jets fan. You know, it won't play out that way. I mean, obviously that remains to be seen. But, you know, from what we've seen after the draft, McCown understands his role is to groom Sam Darnold. He even said it, look, if he's in the Pro Bowl 5 years from now, I'll have done my job. So he seems ready to embrace that role of coach slash quarterback coach slash mentor to Sam Darnold, which is a good sign. And with Bridgewater, you're hoping that he's healthy enough that, like I said, they could perhaps deal him to, you know, bolster other spots of that roster come, you know, a couple of weeks from now.
All right, so Mark, I have to ask the question. Have you been looking into quarterbacks in 2019? I mean, you know, with Tom Brady being up there in the age and, you know, the Patriots possibly looking to get that guy to follow up on him, have you been looking into 2019's guys?
Darren, you know the answer to that question.
Yes.
I have a watch list of 40 guys that I've watched. I have watched anywhere from, say, 5 to 7 games on each of these guys. I have some early 2019 draft takes, which I am more than willing to share if you guys are so inclined to hear them.
Good, good. Look, before I ask you about that watch list, first off, people listening, find yourself someone that loves you as much as Mark Schofield loves looking at quarterbacks. All right, law of the land. Right there. Find yourself someone that loves you as much as Mark Schofield loves watching QBs. So, Mark, hit me. Give me some of your favorite guys that could be round one potential coming into 2019.
Well, it's interesting. You know, when we were building up to this past draft, there was a thought that perhaps, we'd see 6 quarterbacks drafted in the first round, with that 6th guy perhaps being Mason Rudolph. Now, he fell a little bit. No, we didn't hear his name called until the 3rd round, I believe it was, by the Pittsburgh Steelers. But There was some first-round buzz about Mason Rudolph. There's a guy in this class who I think is the quarterback people hoped Mason Rudolph was, and that's Ryan Finley, the kid from North Carolina State, who I think made a nice leap from 2016 to 2017. 2016, you know, he was a solid quarterback, but there were times when NC State was facing situations and games, they would pull him for other guys. Now they put more on his plate. I thought he made a nice sort of step in terms of the downfield ball. I love the way he handles pocket and pressure and throws with trash in his feet. Definitely something to watch. So, I mean, I think he might be a guy that could make that leap and solidify himself, you know, as an early round quarterback. Some other guys, Tyree Jackson, who yes. I know is a name that people mm-hmm. that listen to this show are going to be excited to hear. Big, athletic, huge arm. And he might be perhaps the quarterback that people thought Josh Allen was, in a sense, because Josh Allen was the guy with the huge arm, the athleticism, the ability to move around. I think Tyree Jackson does a pretty decent job of stuff like that. And what I like with him is he seems to have a higher understanding or more developed when it comes to touch and anticipation and timing and things like that, even though he has a lot worse mechanics than some quarterbacks, including Josh Allen. So it's going to be interesting to see if he refines and tightens up the mechanics of it, because there are some things he can do from an athletic profile that I think are fascinating to watch. Some other guys, I think Drew Locke has gotten a lot of buzz. Kuiper obviously dropped his name right after this past draft ended. What's interesting about Locke is he has perhaps, you know, great to elite arm talent, has that type of NFL arm. But what's interesting is, while I was all over his tape in 2016 with those high-velocity throws, he was running a much more simplified offense. It was almost like, you know, RG3's offense or Bryce Petty's offense at Baylor, where there are a lot of smoke screens and hitches and go routes, not a lot of stuff between the hash marks or the numbers. This year, I think they did more of that this past season, making him make throws over the middle. And he started to move away from the fastball and started to try to use touch a little bit more. So you're starting to see that refinement process underway. And if he really gets better in that area, then, yeah, I think he could live up to some of that hype. Jarrett Stidham, down at Auburn, obviously a kid coming from Baylor. I think they didn't ask him to do a ton. They really relied on the run game and a lot of screens and stuff like that. But he made some really, really, really nice throws. You see some of the throws he made against Alabama, some of the throws he made against Georgia. You know, this is a kid that can play the position at a really high level. I want to see them put more on his plate this year. And if they do, there's another guy that can sort of make that leap, you know, into the first round. Finally, Will Greer.
Yes.
Guy at West Virginia. You know, obviously he's going to get that Big 12 quarterback stuff. There's already a lot of buzz about, oh, is he sort of the next Baker Mayfield? Is he going to be a guy like Baker that's going to come out of nowhere and play himself into the first round? Well, I mean, there's a possibility. You know, he's going to get that sort of Baker Mayfield tag because the Big 12 offense. But what's interesting about him is he does a great job at making full field reads, full field progression reads, keeps his eyes downfield in those scramble drill situations. Very calm in the pocket when he's got chaos around him. Very good deep accuracy. Love his nine ball. Hit a throw against Kansas early in that game that was very impressive. He's got a very quick, almost violent release of the football. So the ball comes out, pops out of his hands well. I'd like to see him clean things up from a ball security standpoint. Sometimes when he's running around back there, that ball, he does nothing to secure it, and he has lost a ton of fumbles, so I'm curious to see if he cleans that up. But definitely got to watch. Those are some first-round type guys. This could be a very deep class. There are some guys deeper in this class that are like Easton Stick from North Dakota State, Brett Rippon from Boise State, two guys in that sort of upper Midwest, so almost to the Pacific Northwest type area. Keep an eye on those guys. And finally, I can't leave first-round guys without Justin Hebert, the kid from Oregon, who another quarterback people are really excited about. Love him from an anticipation standpoint. Love him from a downfield accuracy standpoint. Makes some bucket throws. Very excited to watch him this year, too.
Mark, it's always fun hearing about quarterbacks there, and including
it really
in there
is.
Tyree Jackson. He plays around the corner from our studios
yep.
for UB, and you know, seeing him on the O'Brien watch list was actually kind of huge for me to go ahead and see that he's getting the national recognition, and that's the first step for possibly being a first-round consideration there. I'm a huge fan of Finley and Greer myself. I loved watching them last year, and when I was doing those quarterback power rankings for our website, those two popped out to me. I was like, if they declare, they could be a big deal to me too there. And so, yeah, hey, man, just because the Bills aren't in the market for a quarterback doesn't mean that I can't get excited about it too, just like you, man. And every time I hear from you, that's what I get, is that elite quarterback talk.
That's what I try to bring, my friends. That's what I try to bring to the table.
Hey, man, it's not a Joe Flacco elite for my man Mark Schofield here.
Mark,
it's a truly.
No, so Mark, you're talking about all these potential quarterbacks and being a deep class. Who are some teams in the NFL this year that you think will be looking at these quarterbacks as guys of the future or guys for depth?
I mean, what's interesting is you're going to get a lot of the same teams that we perhaps thought about, you know, in last year's draft cycle, where, you know, there were some dark horse teams, you know, perhaps maybe even in the first round that might have made a move for a quarterback. Obviously, we started this thinking about the New England Patriots. At some point, they are going to have to replace Tom Brady, and it might be this year. And so you look at Tom Brady perhaps, you know, retiring maybe in a year or two. Maybe the New England Patriots. Chargers. I mean, Phillip Rivers can't play forever. And, you know, people were wondering, oh, well, maybe the Chargers will make a move. You know, they didn't do it. So maybe the Chargers are a team that's looking first-round quarterback. Maybe the New Orleans Saints. Similar situation. Drew Brees probably can't play forever. He's going to have to, you know, be replaced at some point. There's a team that might need a quarterback. The Miami Dolphins. What are they going to do with Ryan Tannehill? You know, the Cincinnati Bengals, what are they going to do with Andy Dalton? Those are two teams that are in similar situations where they've got a quarterback, but are they satisfied with the quarterback that they have, or are they in that sort of quarterback purgatory place where people sometimes refer to it as a team that has a quarterback, but maybe they're not getting the kind of quarterback play they need to actually be a successful NFL franchise? And I think what's interesting, guys, is the decision that I think the Jacksonville Jaguars face, you know, in the coming offseason, because right now, Blake Bortles isn't a huge detriment to them from a contract standpoint because of the way they've structured his deal. But over the subsequent couple of seasons, his contract's going to balloon a bit to the point where, while that balloons, they're having to pay guys like Jalen Ramsey and guys like Miles Jack and at some point guys like Leonard Fournette. And so the interesting thing to watch is, you know, we've seen it at, say, the running back position where teams are more willing, like you're seeing right now with the Pittsburgh Penguins, where they'll move on from a guy and be satisfied with getting sort of a replacement to even a star-type player because it's more economically advantageous for them to do that, and while they can pay, you know, use that money to bolster the rest of the roster. Will we start to see teams doing that at the quarterback position, where if they don't have a guy that's like an elite guy, like a Brady, like a Breeze, like a Roethlisberger, will they be willing to say, okay, why don't we just bolster the rest of the offense, rest of the defense, the rest of the roster, and move on from a mid-level talent, mid-level quarterbacks like the Blake Bortles. So I'm really interested to see that Jacksonville decision and how that plays out, because that might be sort of the next wave. We're seeing it now with teams like the Rams and the Eagles, where they got a quarterback on a rookie deal. It's how the Seahawks won their Super Bowl. Get a quarterback cost-controlled early on his contract, you can spend money elsewhere. Eventually, you have to come to that decision. Do you pay the guy or do you move on from him? Seattle made the decision that they paid Russell Wilson, and now we're seeing them have to move on from some of the other guys, and we're seeing that franchise start to struggle a bit. So maybe teams look at that and say, it's much better to bolster the rest of the offense, rest of the defense. We'll get average quarterback play, and that might be enough if we, you know, get lucky at other positions to make a run even with average quarterback play.
It'd be funny how the league works like that if it cycles back that way. So,
yeah.
Mark, thanks for taking...
New Orleans and the Chargers are interesting because those are two teams that really can contend this year. I think the Chargers are a very dark horse team that could challenge New England. They have a really good defense. Joey Bosa going into another year, he might lead the league in sacks. And then they got a good running back in Melvin Gordon. They got good receivers. And Phillip Rivers, he really hasn't looked like he's lost a step. And if he just plays above, even just above average, you know, that's a team that not only wins the AFC West, but can really make a run in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, the Chargers are so fascinating. And you look at the AFC West right now, and in terms of, you know, Vegas over-unders right now, and their over-under is 9.5, the highest in the AFC West. A lot of people are starting to really buy in on the Chargers, and I want to be among them. I mean, you look at that defense, like you mentioned there. You've got Bosa and Ingram coming off the edges. You know, it's a pretty solid secondary with Casey Hayward, one of the better corners in the league. You had Derwin James, who they stole, you know, in the first round of this draft. A lot of people were looking at James as, you know, a higher type pick to get him in the middle of the first round. I mean, this is a, that's a, you know, that's a, you know, playoff type defense right there. You know, when you get a healthy Phillip Rivers, Melvin Gordon obviously still does some things for you. If they get, you know, decent enough play from their receivers and that offensive line, yeah, I mean, this is a team that looks to win the AFC West. And then, you know, who knows? A veteran quarterback making his perhaps last run, that would be fun to watch too.
The only thing that really stinks about the Chargers is that they lost Hunter Henry for the year because he tore his ACL.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to hurt them. And, you know, what's interesting is they didn't really sort of bolster up that tight end position. What was a pretty deep tight end class. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had Virgil Green, but, you know, a lot of, like, undrafted free agent type guys. So they're going to face a question, you know, at the tight end spot. You know, maybe they get lucky. Somebody gets cut. Somebody gets released, sort of a rosters number type situation. They might be able to pick somebody off, you know, from that situation, you know, right before the season starts. But, yeah, losing Henry kind of hurts.
I think New Orleans as well, too, is going to be in a pretty tough spot this year. They can contend for the
they don't have a first round pick.
But they don't have a first round pick. They traded to trade up to get Davenport.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we'll see what they have to do. They might have to punt that decision for a season or so.
The nice thing is that they got Breeze on 2 years, so that gives them at least another couple years to figure things out.
Yep. That's exactly right.
Mark, I mean, I'm hoping if Tyree Jackson remains high on the list, hope maybe you can pop over here at in UB and we may be able to see you around there.
Believe me, once I started watching his games, I actually tweeted it out. I started watching his games and I put out just a very vague tweet, suddenly researching UBuffalo's schedule because I was like, man, I got to see this kid in person. You know, and I got to see this through my own eyes.
Hey, man, we owe you wings from calling
this
in on that draft night. So if you're here, you got to hit me up.
I'm going to bring it up.
Yeah, let us know.
I'm a man of my honor.
Let us know.
I may be an idiot sometimes, but I am honorable.
Well, fantastic. That might seal the deal right there.
There you go. You get wings out of the visit, and you get to watch Tyree Jackson.
That's win-win right there, my friends.
There you go. That's the definition of an added perk.
Yes.
Mark, let the people know where they can find your work.
Best place to find me on Twitter, at Mark Schofield. I will be writing for a bunch of places this season. I will be, obviously, at InsideThePylon.com. I will be doing some work for Big Blue View, covering quarterbacks for the SB Nation's Giants site. I will be doing some work, as I was last draft season, over at Pro Football Weekly, doing some work over there. And the Matt Waldman RSP, my good friend Matt Waldman, MattWaldmanRSP.com. Matt and I love to do quarterback stuff, quarterback evaluation. We'll be doing some stuff over there as well. And a couple of other places which are yet to be finalized and confirmed. So those are classified as of this moment, but look for more stuff from your boy here. But going to be a busy fall, but that's the way we like it.
Absolutely. He is our boy. He's Mark Schofield. He's the man, and he blessed the rains down in Africa.
That is what I do. By the way, friends, November 8th, I believe, or 7th, live at Warner Theater here in the Washington, D.C. area, Toto. 40 trips around the sun. I will be there along with the wife, and I've already told her, look, there will come a point where you will have to shoot a video of me sitting along to Africa, because if I don't do that, people will just, they won't believe anymore. They won't believe in the dream if I don't provide the timeline with that content. So look for that early November.
I mean, I wouldn't even need a video to count on you doing it.
This is true.
Yeah, well, I just got to do it. I got to do that for the people. That's what the timeline demands. That's the content they want.
Well, hey, man, I'm all for that. I'm all for that, and I'm all for tagging you for any sort of thing that I see Africa Toto related on Twitter as well. Find him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. You can also find him right here on the Leftovers Podcast. Mark, thanks for taking the time, brother.
You got it, my friends. Have a great night.
Hey, man, hope
you
to see you
Mark.
In Buffalo and get you them wings.
Sounds great.
All right. That was Mark Schofield, Inside the Pylon. Quarterback aficionado and lover of everything Toto.
Yes. If and when he comes to Buffalo to watch UB, where are we going to take him for wings?
I'm going Elmo's or Barbill. He's got to get nothing but the best.
Sure.
Okay. The man called us at 1 a.m. on a Friday morning after the first round of the draft. He deserves nothing but the best.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah, man.
Okay, I would have also said the 9/11 Tavern. They got some really good wings.
Maybe we get some. Maybe we get small orders of wings from each of those places.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
And then he can just really deck
that'd
out.
That'd be fun.
It. Yeah, man.
Yeah, go some different places.
Man deserves
get
at
some
least
nice small orders.
Man
yeah.
deserves at least 20.
We'll all just we'll all get together and then we'll just all munch on them.
Man deserves at least 20-25 from me.
Definitely,
because that was a big time favorite and it was also
a
blast.
We'll put money together and do.
There
and
we
get
go.
Some. You know, when he was talking about UB too, it got me really excited for the season, because you're talking about Tyreek Jackson, but then you've also got Anthony Johnson.
That's true. You've got a potential round one wide receiver,
yeah.
Potential round one quarterback, real legitimate chances hype. Of these, and hype. Hype from a draft prospect that we haven't seen since Khalil Mack.
And hype for a football program that we haven't seen in, 10 years?
Exactly.
Because
so
they when last time UB won the Mack was, I think, 2008. Or 2009, something like that. They played the they played UConn in the Independence
yes,
Bowl.
In the Independence Bowl, and that didn't end well.
And it really
to Donald
ended,
Brown.
But they, yeah, they but
jerk.
Yeah, they still won the MAC that year, and it was really cool.
It was a wacky year. It was a yep. fun year, and guess what? We're gonna get more of that. I mean, UB and the Big Four basketball scene has reemerged. So mm-hmm. why not the football scene?
Yeah,
for UB, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
I would love to see it, and I hope that people pay attention, because Tyree Jackson is worth having your eyes on. So there it is. Hey, man. This is another fun-filled episode here
yeah.
on the Leftovers podcast.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's just, I'm ready. Training camp is around the corner.
Yep.
We do our full-blown training camp preview on Wednesday. I've got a series going on right now on WGR550.com, previewing each of the position groups. Today, and it's going to be a late one. It's going to be pretty much ready for you tomorrow morning. That's what happens, unfortunately, when you're out and about for the mm-hmm. day and you hadn't written something yet.
Right.
The offensive line, be ready for you. And then the wide receivers and tight ends, running backs, quarterbacks.
Yep.
The series is finishing up. The defense is already done. If you want to read up on the secondary, linebackers, or defensive line, it's on the website. You can always check it out there. Dude, we've made it.
Yeah,
training camp is here. Football is here. Let's go. And it's
Let's
not
go.
Just the Bills. UB
yep.
get started too.
Yep.
So let's get ready to watch some football.
It's going to be a very interesting year for Buffalo football, just all together.
Yeah. Buffalo sports, because you got
then,
Tyree
and
Buffalo, Anthony Johnson.
And then Buffalo sports. Actually, yeah, it's just Buffalo. Yeah, you're right. It's just Buffalo sports, because you
got
the
names,
Bills.
Tyree, Anthony Johnson.
Yep.
The Bills. Does Josh Allen get in right away?
Yep.
If not, you know, there's still plenty of intrigue there. Nathan Peterman may be the most polarizing quarterback in the group.
What's Tremaine Edmonds going to be?
Tremaine Edmonds going to be? Is he going to be that stud that everyone's saying?
Yep.
And then you've got the Sabres. Dahlin's coming in. Middle stats ready for the first full year. You got Eichel changing to 9.
Maybe he's captain?
Whew. I'm ready.
Hutton and Olmark, and then you got UB men's and women's basketball.
And then Big Four basketball making its return, where all four teams looked pretty dang good last year.
Yeah.
And two of which made the tourney, one of which stomped Arizona. Thank you for that.
That was great.
And UB.
And then,
the
women's
team
made the Sweet 16.
Made the run to the Sweet 16. So, dude, we're ready.
Yeah.
And it starts in 4 days.
It starts in 4 days.
It all starts again in 4 days. Let's get it.
Let's do it.
Booyah time. Thanks as always for listening to Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
Frank R. Curry.
And again, thank you for listening. It's always fun talking sports. And I hope you have fun, as much fun, listening here. And as they always say, bury your face in some wings.